This is No Direction's PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage. PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage was made possible thanks to the support of the Roll for Combat podcast, as well as the dedication of our team of volunteers. Due to possibly questionable language, this panel is rated Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Welcome to Designing a Monster with Necromancers of the Northwest. Why don't we go ahead and get started by telling you guys a little bit about who we are and why you should care, or why you might care what we have to say about designing monsters.
So I'm Josh Zabak, and I'm a designer at Necromancers of the Northwest. We've been building monsters in one form or another for almost 10 years, not quite, I guess. We've had several kind of small bestiaries, and we have a regular article where we provide free monsters on our website. So we've had a fair amount of experience doing this, something we enjoy, and something that that we think you'll enjoy doing too.
My name is Alex Riggs. In addition to the work that I do with Necromancers of the Northwest, covering all the same kind of stuff he talked about, I've also done some freelance work for some other folks. I've made a lot of different mythic monsters for Legendary Games, if you're familiar with any of their products, and I've got a handful of monsters in the Bestiary 5, and another, I did all the like pirates for the Villain Codex, if you've seen those. So now that you know who we are, let's get to know a little bit more about the room here. So show of hands, there's going to be a little audience participation in this, by the way. Show of hands, who here has never ever built a monster at all?
Okay.
Who has taken like an existing monster and made some modifications to it? Okay. Who's ever made a monster completely from scratch? Okay.
Nice.
And just for fun, who here went to the Paizo monster design panel yesterday? Okay.
This won't be that much like that.
It's not going to be very much like that. Bearing all of that in mind, since it seems like we've got kind of a diverse spectrum here, touching on kind of the big picture things to bear in mind, if you take one thing away from this panel, it should be that designing monsters is not nearly as hard or intimidating as most players and GMs think that it is. It's actually pretty easy. Big trade secret. You absolutely can do it, and it will make your if you run games, it will definitely allow you to better customize your game and have more fun with it.
Basically, making monsters comes down to kind of two things. Making sure all your numbers fit and that the thing isn't like wildly too powerful or too weak. And then coming up with cool things for the monster to do. And we're gonna walk you through that process in the next 55 minutes or so.
Yeah, we may not get all the way through making the monster. We want to make sure that there's some time for questions. Probably maybe a little more time since we've got a nice cozy little group here. But we'll kind of run you through the basics of it. So you may be familiar. There's a section in the back of the bestiary that covers monster creation. We've got it up here. And the whole process for outlining how you go about making monsters, it's only 4 pages. It's actually much, much shorter and in many ways much, much easier than making a character. So again, it looks kind of scary at first, but it's really quite simple. The first thing that you need when you're making a monster is you need to figure out the concept, the basic idea. There's a few different ways that you can start with this. Generally, when you're doing it for yourself, for your home game, you're probably going to start with, you know, okay, I have an adventure. I know, you know, that I'm running for my game. I know what level my players are. I know, you know, where they're going. They're going into this abandoned temple or they're going into the sewers. So I know I need a monster that you know, is going to be in this place and about that powerful. You know, depending on why you're making monsters, you may have other places where you're going to start. Today, not because it's necessarily the best place to start, but because it can sometimes make it really easy to have things flow from it, we're going to start with a name for the monster. So I mentioned before there's going to be some audience participation. I'm hoping you guys won't let us down here, but if you do, we've got a backup. Anybody, throw out a name for a monster. Yeah, all right, that's about what I figured.
Well, give him a second. Give him a second.
Crypt Burster.
Crypt Burster.
Crypt Burster. All right. Well, that's coming up. Crypt Burster could be an undead, could be a lot of things. So we've got ourselves a Crypt Burster. We need to know a little bit more about it, though. We also need to know a CR. So again, somebody, just throw out a CR, 1 to 20.
5.
All right. At this point, we can also go ahead and fill in the XP.
Some of you may not use XP in your games, but for us, we don't necessarily know whether the people who are enjoying our work are going to be using XP or just deciding when people level up or whatever. So we would recommend you include it.
All right. The next thing that we're going to want to know is what type of monster is it? So anybody?
I think it'd be fun to be an animal.
Animal. All right.
Like have some like big vulture thing that breaks into tombs or something like that.
Animal is kind of a trickier one because as a creature type, they're designed to be mundane, but we're going to make it cool.
It is possible to have monsters that have interesting abilities. You don't generally see it, but it can happen.
As long as it doesn't have a magical ability, it's still fine as an animal.
Right.
Exactly.
You can give it a tentacle and still be an animal.
Exactly. We want a couple more things before we start jumping into the nitty-gritty stuff. We want some kind of big idea for this monster. The name is obviously very evocative. We know it's an animal. Somebody tell me something cool that this is going to do or something cool about the way that it's going to fight. Just throw something out. And if not, again, I have a backup.
First, there's going to be bursts and like splatters.
All right. It's going to...
Explosive entrance. Let's call that explosive entrance.
All right. Explosive entrance. Just going to make a note of that. We'll come back to it later. And then finally, somebody give me a size.
Colossal.
Come on.
Okay.
The monster may not make a ton of sense, but we will work with it. You can use the rules to make whatever you want. The next thing that we're going to look at is the target statistics. And
quick aside before we start with the target statistics, because we're about to tell you about how these are great guidelines, and that you sometimes need to deviate from guidelines. Colossal monsters tend to be really big and strong, and so I have a lot of trouble fitting a CR5.
Josh is jumping ahead a little bit here. So you'll notice if you wind up reading through this later for the sizes, Paizo actually has a table with minimum and maximum CRs for various creature types. Theoretically speaking, the rules say you shouldn't be able to have a CR5 colossal monster. The reason for that is that generally speaking, the size penalties and the amount of damage from the natural attacks is gonna make that really tricky. And honestly, it's gonna be kind of weird for us to have the kind of strength numbers we're gonna need this to have and have it be as big as it is. We'll figure that out in a bit. But the important thing is, again, they are guidelines.
So even though we're looking at at one section of the rule, it's telling us we need like a, I think it's a CR8 monster for Colossus. We're gonna use the target statistics, and we're going to meddle all of his other various statistics to bring all the crazy bonuses he gets from being big down close to those target numbers.
But backing up a sec, the reason why target numbers are something to pay attention to is basically the numbers are the way that the monster is going to interact with your party. So the target numbers that are provided here on table 1-1 monster statistics by CR, theoretically, these numbers are what's going to allow the monster to be about the right power level for your game. So If we kind of take a look here, we can see it takes us from CR 1 half up to 20, and it tells us, you know, how many hit points they should have. Why should they have that many hit points at that CR? Because generally speaking, based on how much damage the average party is going to do per round, and the average number of rounds, you typically want a monster to stay alive, which is typically somewhere between 2 to 4. It's going to take that long to kill them. And again, armor class is based on, you know, okay, well, if we want the party to be able to hit the monster on average a certain amount of times, based on what level they're going to be, how hard it's going to be to hit them from their attack bonus, and so on and so forth. And so you absolutely can deviate from these, and they're kind of a sort of a spectrum. You can, you know, if you go a little bit to one side or the other, it's not that big of a deal. In fact, if you take a look in the bestiary, you can see there are some examples that went pretty far off base. At CR7, if we take a look here, primary ability DC should be 17. If you want to go take a look at a very standard and iconic monster, the Succubus, you will see that they can dominate person at DC 23 and charm monster at DC 22, which is pretty far off base. That's about five or six off. That's going to be what that translates to is you're about 30% more likely to fail a saving throw to resist her ability than a monster that was on target. As long as you know that that's what's going on and you're aware of why you're doing that, that's perfectly okay. So these are not, you're not married to these, but if you're going to be deviating significantly from them, you should have some idea why. So that said, this tells us where we want to get to. We want to have our monster have CR5, so we want it to have 55 hit points. But we don't just give it 55 hit points with these rolls. There are other systems. If you go look at Unchained, it works a little bit differently. But in order to get those, we need to give it hit dice, we need to give it ability scores, and that's the goal we're working towards. So we have an animal. So this takes us to table 1-2 creature hit dice, which is going to tell us basically by creature type and by CR roughly how many hit dice the monster is going to need in order to get it close to those target numbers so that we can do the rest with their ability scores and things. So it's an animal, it's CR5, it's going to need to have about 7 hit dice. Now realistically it's colossal, so it's going to have a huge penalty to its attack. So we're probably going to want to give it more hit dice than that to make up for it.
Right.
And so...
I have an idea, actually.
Sure.
What if this is something akin to, say, a pufferfish that changes size? So you normally aren't colossal, but that's key to the creature.
That's
maybe
a...
explosive expansion, maybe. Explosive entrance.
Wow, you know, that is a really cool idea. I think I'm going to run with that.
So I was just imagining like going into crypts.
I like it. It also gives us kind of the tricky thing, just while we're making some adjustments, about animals for me is coming up with interesting abilities for them to have. Like some animals, it's easy. Like you'll know that like crocodiles can death roll and, you know, some of them have like some kind of special tracking ability and that sort of thing. But finding something natural and evocative can be a challenge. Looking at something that's already in nature, like a pufferfish, for example, that can do something kind of incredible, is a great place to start for unique abilities for something that has a more natural bent to it.
All right.
It's also a great place to draw inspiration in general. It's a good insight.
So, now that we know that it's going to be an animal, and we're going to, since we've dropped it down to medium, we're going to give it ability to make it bigger, to hit that goal of making it be able to be colossal. We know that we're going to stick with the 7 hit dice for now. So I went ahead and skipped forward to creature statistics by type. It tells us animals get die 8s, and their hit dice are going to have 3/4 base attack. They have good fortitude and reflex. So we know it's going to have 7 die 8 hit points from its hit dice. I went ahead and plugged that into my Excel sheet here. Is 7 times 4.5 on average is going to come out to 31.5. So we need to, in order to get to our goal of 55 hit points, we're missing 24. So it's got 7, so we're going to want to give it probably plus 3, get it 21, it'll be just under.
Yeah, it seems good to me.
So this has now decided that its constitution is going to be either 16 or 17. We plug in 21 there. And that gives us 52 hit points. And then we can also go ahead, plug in that its base attack is going to be, what, 5?
Yeah,
basic math.
Math's hard for some of us, which is why
yes,
numbered tables are very useful tools. Those of us who are bad with numbers and patterns, but use them regularly, frequently, even professionally.
Thankfully, there's a very handy table here that again breaks all of this stuff down. We can also, we'll come back to the saving throws and skills later. So at this point, we've started plugging in the ability scores. We know as an animal, it's not going to have more than an intelligence of 2. Generally speaking, charisma is not really going to matter. What are we thinking, Room? Are we thinking that this is probably going to be a monster that's going to hit with its strength or with its dex?
Well, if the whole goal is for it to somehow get bigger, then it's probably going to be dexterous right now. So when it's in its normal size, it's relatively dexterous, but then when it blows up, it's not.
That's exactly right. If we have the idea that the monster's going to get bigger and probably a lot stronger, in its basic form, it probably needs a relatively low strength so that the big jump in strength brings its like attack and damage, or its attack back to where it's going to be from its penalty to attack from being giant, and its damage up to just a little bit above where its like average kind of number is, so that it's not crazy, but it does get more powerful when it gets bigger.
So we can see again from our handy dandy table 1-1 here, we're looking for his attack numbers to be somewhere between 7 and 10. So personally, I'd like for him to probably be able to do that, whether he's at his normal size or all blown up. So we'll go ahead and have him start, if we're going to have give him weapon finesse and have him be kind of dex to hit people. We'll go ahead and start him with a dex of 20. That gives us a lot of room to let it drop down when he gets big, and it also is conveniently going to put him, once we spend one of his feats on weapon finesse, I guess he's an animal, so he'll get a bonus feat. Is going to put him at the right attack bonus. His strength, we want to give him some room to improve. And then his wisdom can pretty much be whatever we want it to be. It looks like he's looking to have save somewhere between 3 and 7. Animal, it's going to be one of his bad saves, and at 7 hit dice, that's going to give him a 2. So we'll go ahead and make that a 12. His will save is now 3. His good saving throw is going to be plus 5, so that gives him 10 for his reflex and 8 for his fortitude. So pretty close to where we want it to be. And then now that we've got that information, we can also plug in his CMB and CMD are pretty straightforward. I'm going to go ahead and skip over those for now to make sure that we have enough time to get through all of the fun stuff. We would also, I think as an animal, he's going to get low light vision. And we know that his initiative is going to be plus 5. So let's talk a little bit about some of the trickier numbers or less intuitive numbers to kind of figure out. So first off, as we take a look here on table 1-1, monsters digit by CR, you'll notice, so we've got hit points, armor class, high attack, low attack are the just kind of the attack bonus ranges. And then you've got average damage, which is, you know, how much damage in a turn is the monster going to do if all of his attacks hit on average die rolls. So we can see here we want him to get somewhere between 15 and 20. At low CRs, typically, it's not that hard to get where you want to go. At higher CRs, getting up to some of these numbers can sometimes require some
creative thinking. Let's call it creative thinking.
Obviously, this is it's an animal. We're going to give it some natural attacks. Given what you all have in your minds as you imagine this pufferfish burster creature, what are people thinking as far as what would be a flavorfully appropriate natural attack? Just throw some out at me.
Some sort of spines or something.
Okay, like ranged spines.
Oh, I've seen like blaze spines. So then when it gets big, it punctures everything nearby.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
What if it hunts stuff that like is light sensitive, so that like when it bursts, it's actually bursting out of the ground and like exposing that thing to the light?
Mm-hmm. That's certainly interesting. Yeah, why don't we go with, so it's kind of, it's got all of these spikes on it, it's crushing people with its, you know, it's ramming into people. That sounds like a slam to me. Mm-hmm. It's going to be different than normal because we're gonna give it some sort of ability that makes it do piercing because it's got all of these spikes, but it sounds like it's going to be a slam. So normally, according to, I skipped ahead to the, under the Universal Monster Rules, it's got this handy table for natural attacks, tells you kind of all the standard different types of natural attacks, how much damage they usually do for creatures based on size, but this is, if the other stuff was a guideline, this is
a rule of thumb. Ignore.
Tells you what type of damage it normally does and whether it's normally primary or secondary. So we know he's going to have a slam. We know at medium size he's going to slam at plus 10. and normally it would do, with what we've currently got, 1 die 4 minus 1, which is going to average out to a whopping 1.5 damage per round, which is a far cry from 15 to 20. Now that said, we can cheat this a little bit. We could probably get this up to maybe get away with 1 die 8 without people looking at us too crazy. But we've still got a long ways to go.
It's also be an area slam, right? Expanding is probably not attacking one thing. So that adjusts the damage.
It certainly could, and we can do that with we can give him some special abilities. We're certainly going to get to special attacks in a minute here.
Yeah.
There are a few different tricks to try and get us up there. When I think of a pufferfish that's hitting people with its spines, the first place that I go to for that is going to be some kind of poison. Now, poison isn't generally going to do hit point damage directly. It could, but typically it doesn't. However, if it's going to be a poison that does constitution damage, you're pretty much doing the same thing.
Right.
So that's where I would probably go here. If we had a different monster type, if we were looking at, you know, an outsider or a magical beast or something, then maybe you start looking at giving it some extra energy damage. You can pretty much throw whatever energy damage you want on it. It's not a problem. Get to whatever numbers you need to get to. If we were concepting it as something different, I might be tempted to start looking at giving it a bunch of additional melee attacks, give it, you know, something that has more limbs. This really sounds to me like it's probably, you know, it's slamming into things with its spine, so it's probably not going to be making a bunch of attacks. There's different tricks and ways to get it up there. We're going to go ahead and say plus poison for now. And then one thing that I definitely want to touch on when it comes to figuring out monster stats, because it's very unintuitive and it's something that that may take a little bit of time to kind of get used to. I certainly had to kind of have it slammed into my head a few times, is figuring out how to get the armor class, because the, you know, everything else here, there's tricks and things you go through. The hit dice determines the base attack, and you know, it gets so many skill points or what have you. The armor class, though, pretty much is going to boil down to, most of the time, it's pretty much going to boil down to you add its dexterity, and then nine monsters out of ten, it's just How much natural armor does it need to get where it needs to go? And that's perfectly fine.
Now, it's easy to envision that when you have an animal or a beast or something, but most often you're going to end up using the same basic idea with, like, most outsiders. If you start looking around, you'll discover they have a lot of natural armor and that sort of thing. There are workarounds. You know, there are creatures who can get deflection bonuses to their AC or have insight bonuses, or humanoid-type monsters can wear armor or use shields. But generally speaking, when you need to get from, like, 17 to 27, at 10 natural armor is pretty much how you're doing it.
It's not the most
exciting thing in the world, but that is pretty much the trick.
So it may feel weird that something that, you know, looks basically human, has normal skin, is going to have 10 times more natural armor than an armadillo and a turtle put together. It's just how the system works. I personally, when I can get away with it, I try to come up with, you can give it abilities that give it bonuses to AC. You can play around. To a certain extent, there's a little bit of granularity as far as, you know, okay, well, I can give him bonuses that will affect his touch AC or his flat-footed and make that a little bit more different, or it interacts differently with, deflection interacts with incorporeal touch and that sort of stuff. But for the most part, honestly, your players are never going to notice or care where the monster's AC is coming from.
So there's feats that can increase AC. If you
there's
decide
a couple.
To pick those, would those you use that to increase it over the limit, or you would use that to get to the limit?
There's different schools of thought on that. Generally speaking, what matters, so it's, again, it's not a limit is the way to think about it. It's a guideline.
Right.
And the reason it's a guideline is, you know, these are numbers that, generally speaking, if it's fairly close to that, it's going to work. It's going to perform the way you want when it goes up against players. So those numbers are pretty much the goal. Personally, I tend to do feats last. So generally speaking, I will probably wind up pushing things over with my feats is more likely how I tend to do it. But honestly, again, it's also, you know, a plus one here is not that big of a difference. If you really, really want the monster to have, if you want a monster that's, you know, a big, tough, high AC, high hit points, guy that is his big thing is that he's going to be hard to take down, by all means, go over on those numbers. Just be aware that you probably then want to start taking a look at going under on your offensive stuff, and also be aware that if you're setting up your monster that way, that means that the fight is probably more likely to run longer because it's going to take longer to kill him, and it's also going to be less threatening because it's not doing as much damage. So that may not be the most exciting fight. By contrast, if you decide to go, hey, I really want this monster to hit really hard, and you give him, you know, higher than normal attack and higher than normal damage, again, probably going to want to bring down his AC and hit points, and you should be aware as you're making that choice that this is going to result in a monster that is going to potentially be a lot more swingy at the table. So if he gets a couple good rolls, you may wind up with half your party dead. If he gets a couple bad rolls, he may do nothing because he's going to die very quickly because he has low AC and hit points. And again, as long as that's what you're looking for, is a swingy monster that's highly variable, that's going to work out just fine for you.
Other things to kind of look out for when you're manipulating that AC with bonuses other than natural armor is a lot of those other modifiers also manipulate other statistics, like the creature's combat maneuver defense, and bonuses against touch attacks and things like that you may not necessarily want. I know that's a while ago we were making a book that was full of demons. It was really cool. But we had a lot of temptation to give guys a bunch of, like profane bonuses to AC and things like that that were felt more flavorfully appropriate, but meddled with the statistics in ways we didn't really want. So you had to kind of dial that back down a little bit. Also, if you're thinking about giving your monster improved natural armor as a feat, most of the time I would just give it more natural armor, personally. If you're modifying an existing monster, though, and you're switching out feats because you want to give it more AC or something like that, I think that would be probably more the kind of area you'd want to look at using something like that.
Yeah. In this particular case, for this monster, it's a CR5 animal. We're not really going to give it much in the way of defensive abilities. But before I delete...
Oh, I don't know about that, actually, but we'll get there in a second.
But before we delete that line, or Josh apparently has some other thoughts, I do want to touch a little bit on that, because, again, another one of the places where the steps in the bestiary maybe don't go into a whole lot of detail is giving monsters defensive abilities. Generally speaking, the higher CR you're going up to, as you increase in the CR of the monster, the more you want to start looking at giving it some kind of defensive abilities. By very high CRs, a lot of monsters tend to have like a couple of immunities to energy and maybe a couple more resistances on top of that. And then DR gets more and more common as you go up there as well.
Some are specific to the type.
Right. Obviously, sometimes the creature type or subtype is going to have that built in as well. There's no hard and fast rule as far as what defensive abilities to give the monster. Generally speaking, I recommend taking a look at some monsters in a similar CR bracket and seeing what they've got as far as like if you're going to give it DR, the amount of the DR is generally speaking going to be more or less dictated by that CR, but it's not like spell resistance where it's a hard and fast formula generally. So it's more like generally up to about CR7, it tends to be DR5. From about 8 to about 13-14, it tends to be about CR 10, and above that you start seeing higher numbers sometimes. And then similarly with the resistances and stuff. Very much more an art than a science. You apparently want to give it some kind of defensive abilities.
Oh, yeah. With respect to this in particular creature, since it's covered in spikes, I think we can give it some kind of anti-grapple or...
Okay. That's fair.
You know, damage shield. I also want to point out, when you're giving your monster defensive abilities, it's really important to bend them to the concept of the creature. Like, if you have the idea that this thing is going to be, you know, like generally going to be serving as a boss monster, you know, you want to give it immunities to the things that are going to instantly kill it right away. Whereas if even at the same CR, if you're designing the creature as more of a shock trooper type monster, something that people are going to fight more than once in the same dungeon, you know, energy resistance is probably a better move, because it's going to be a lot less anticlimactic to kill it in one shot. Similarly, you know, if your creature is like, you know, some kind of big scaly thing that's got an impenetrable hide, you know, that's something that you want to give some kind of damage reduction to. Whereas if it's, you know, kind of a slithery thing that's going to be growing back, maybe you want to consider regeneration instead.
And then you may see I'm working a little bit here on wording out some of these special abilities, because it's going to be really boring to watch me do that. So I try to do that while he's talking. So when it comes to special abilities, again, there's no strict, you know, this is how many special abilities the monster should have at this CR. Generally speaking, what you give the monster the abilities that it needs to do whatever it is that you want it to do. Typically speaking, the lifespan of your average monster, as far as how long it's on stage and interacting with your players, tends to be between about 2 and 4 rounds. They don't really last very long. So typically speaking, it's not really worthwhile to load a monster up with a million different things it can do, because it's going to do about 2 to 4 of them. That said, you know, it definitely, you know, there are times where you want to be able to give them, you know, stuff that they can do. You know, maybe you want the monster to have cool things it's doing outside of combat. In this particular case, we're giving it some defensive abilities and things, which again are not going to sort of eat into its, this is how many actions it's going to get to do. But it's something that's cool about the monster that we want people to be able to experience and interact with. Yeah.
Well, since it's getting bigger,
mm-hmm.
I think evolutionarily, like with animals especially, there has to be a reason for it. So as I said earlier, maybe it's breaking out of things. Normally, when you grow in size in Pathfinder, you can't break what you're in.
Yeah.
So maybe given an ability where it can do that.
Well, given the name, I think that's certainly an appropriate way to do that. And also, I mean, let's be honest, it's going to be really cool if your players are all like, hey, we're about to open the sarcophagus, and then the sarcophagus explodes in their face. And I'm probably not going to bother to write out the full length of the wording on this ability, because if I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, writing out how to adjudicate changing size is a huge pain, and this is going to be like a 2-paragraph ability. But yeah, basically my thought process here, he's going to have an ability. He's going to get to increase in size, maybe 1 or 2 steps at a time. I hadn't gotten there quite yet, but obviously we're going to give him a bit of a strength boost and a bit of a dex penalty every time he does that. Eventually he'll switch over. This particular monster and this ability, you should probably be aware, if you were going to be using this, this is going to be a real headache to run at the table, because it's going to require constantly adjusting all of these numbers. If I were GMing this and I actually wanted to use this at my table, I would wind up writing a stat block for each different size, is probably what I would do. Obviously, generally speaking, we tend to be making monsters to, you know, go put out for people to consume and use in their games. I might generally shy away from something that's going to be as GM taxing as this. But since you guys would be the GMs using these things, if that's an ability that speaks to you, you know, the only person who's going to have to do all of that work is you. So by all means.
It depends a lot on how you're publishing, right? If you're publishing in print, you've got page limitations and issues there, right? But if you're not in print, I'll just put it the way I see it. You're a jerk if you don't do the stat blocks for them, right? I mean, it's like, why give them that accounting work if you don't have real reasons not to?
I definitely hear that. We don't do very many adventures, but when we do, I try to make it a point to make sure that we have full stat blocks for everything, because I know that I personally hate when I go and I'm still through an adventure and it's like, oh hey, go grab the stat block from here. Anyway.
It's also worth noting that this in particular monster and some monsters like it are going to have some boring abilities that explain the way things work. Like this one's gonna have like something called Piercing Slam.
Right.
That tells you its slam attack does pierce damage as well as bludgeoning damage. Yeah, if you scout around, you'll notice that there's a handful of weird abilities that you'll see every now and again. You're like, well, why is that an ability? The reason is because slam attacks don't do piercing damage normally.
Right.
So we need to tell you that it does piercing damage.
And the special abilities are really, they're almost like, as a designer, they're basically your secret weapon that allows you to go, okay, I need this monster to do this. The rules don't let it do that. I'm going to make a rule that says it does that. I'm going to put it right here. And you can pretty much do whatever you want with the special abilities.
Special abilities basically code words for make a new rule.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or you can borrow, because the spiky body, there's other creatures in Pathfinder that have like spiky bodies.
Yeah.
And this ability is probably going to work very similarly to those.
Yeah.
Sure, this one's going to work a little differently because the spines probably won't do like bleed damage or whatever. But yeah, it's going to work. It's going to work similarly. That's
you can still, like, pull some
out. Yeah, that's a good trick for when you're not sure how you want something to work right away is to look at something that's kind of similar and go, oh, okay, well, we'll do it like this. The same trick is when you're designing spells or magic items, to find something that kind of works the same way and go, all right, well, if I was doing it, I would do it this way, but a little bit differently.
All right, so we've used up most of our time at this point. We're going to have people knocking on our door here in about 10 minutes or so. So rather than have us just talk at you about making monsters, does anybody here have any questions, anything that that you know maybe either based on what we've talked about or completely different from your own stuff playing with making monsters?
Maybe briefly describe the favorite monster you've ever made.
Oh God, there's so many.
There are a couple that I really like.
So one of the ones. So I mentioned I'd gotten some monsters in the Bestiary 5, and I was actually pretty late getting onto that product or that project, and I kind of got. I didn't get to pick out any of the monsters. They were like, hey, we've got some of these left. Why don't you take some of those? And they were, I don't know exactly what that group was, but they were like all old, they were like old AD&D monsters from like somebody's favorite supplement that nobody'd ever heard of that they wanted to get ported over. And one of them was this, it's from like Dark Sun, and it's I forget what it's called. It's like this big, it's this like mid CR undead, and it's this like shadowy collection of lost souls, and its cool thing was it could like send people nightmares to draw them in over the course of like several miles. It had like a bunch of psychic stuff and was all about despairing things. And my favorite thing about it, the one thing that I was really stoked that I managed to get in there was I gave him some ability. Because I was kind of translating it over from the other stuff. He had some ability where he could, like, inflict somebody with, like, really nasty despair. And, you know, it gave a bunch of really bad penalties and stuff like that. And I thought it would be really fun and tropey to maybe work something in where your allies could, like, help you overcome it with the power of friendship. And I managed to get them to publish it. So nice. I thought that was... I was proud of myself for that.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I don't know, thinking back, I think my favorite stuff is like the stuff that I just really liked the concept of when I was doing. Like a few years ago, we did this bottle-oni creature that's tied to a bottle of spirits, and you can kind of conjure it from that, and you can trap it in the bottle. I thought that was kind of neat. Also, a potion beast which lives in your potion bottles. Like, I think it was last year I did all these like mimic monsters.
Yeah, it was either last year or the year before. We wound up with like three different. Yeah, there was basically a potion mimic and basically a scroll mimic, and we're jerks. I don't know what to tell you.
But, I think those creatures were pretty neat. You know, it had potion-related abilities, and I like stuff that kind of makes people sit up and pay attention to some of the stuff that they tend to forget about, like that healing potion they bought at level one, and now suddenly it starts, you know, causing trouble in the night. I like monsters a lot that remain relevant at higher levels, so either stuff that can be purchased as a familiar or that has some kind of spell abilities or harvestable components that makes it so that your CR1 or 2 monster can remain something that is relevant to players when they're level 12, 13, 14, and so on.
Any other questions? Well, I saw yours first.
Are there times you're tempted to use the rules in Pathfinder Unchained, or is it just at this point, are you so practiced that it's kind of two different ways of saying similar thing?
Yeah, so I'm very fond, as a designer, I very much enjoy the process for Unchained a lot more, and Starfinder, we've been doing more Starfinder monsters lately, and the process is basically the same there.
It's so much faster.
It cuts out all of the middleman stuff. You don't worry about hit dice, you don't worry about all of that other stuff. You just plug in, you go, okay, well his AC is supposed to be 20, so it's 20, and I don't need to tell you why. And honestly that's really nice and refreshing for us. When doing Pathfinder, I don't design things that way because I know that there are going to be times where, GMs may want some of that additional information that's more in the background there, spells that care about hit dice and all of that kind of stuff. I do that with that. But no, don't get me wrong. I love doing the Starfinder ones with the way that they do that there, because
it's faster.
It's as we said, about half the work for monster design is toying with the numbers to get them where you want them to go. The Unchained and the Starfinder system for monster design is you just have the numbers be what you want, and then you focus on the part that's more about design.
There is, however, I think something to be said for the kind of more involved kind of numbers breakdown is, outside of when I'm actually sitting down and doing all the grindy work of figuring out where that AC bonus came from, it's in the back of my head, and as a player, I've always appreciated that everything basically follows the same rules, and you can look at it and figure out where it's coming from, so you know what blocks they use to build the tower, so to speak. And I find that's kind of part of why that's enjoyable. It's nice to know that creature was built at least in a way that I can understand, and it's less arbitrary. And I feel like maybe some customers respond to that. I don't really know, but that's something I appreciated about.
It does sometimes feel a little bit like cheating when we can just go, yeah, no, of course he does this. But honestly, that's what we do anyway. We go, well, we want his strength to be this, so that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's just a more straightforward way of doing it. I think we can probably squeeze in one more question.
Okay.
Mine's a little bit meta than an individual monster. When you're doing something like a whole bestiary, what do you think about from the set of monsters and the suite of monsters, and what goes into that besides just a monster and the design and creation there?
Yeah. So we've done a couple of kind of smaller bestiaries. We did one that was a bunch of sort of demon things, and that was actually based off the Ars Goetia. So as far as that goes, we went, okay, we want to have a spread of CRs, and we assigned the existing demons to those. The other one was the space one that you did.
Yeah.
And that, again, we started off with, okay, we want to make sure that we hit CRs 1 to 20 and represent everything in that field. Most of the monsters we do in article form, but we do, at the end of each year, we kind of collect all of those articles together, put them in a book, and so... I generally spend some time planning out the year as far as, okay, generally speaking, we're doing somewhere in the neighborhood of about 20 to 25 monsters over the course of the year. So I try to make sure that we spread those out across all of the CRs so that we hit the full range 1 to 20. And then I try to make sure that we hit each... each creature type a couple of times and kind of spread those out. Now that said, if we were going to make a bigger bestiary, if we were going to do like a Paizo size, we're going to do like 300 or 400 monsters in this. Realistically, I would probably rather than go, let's hit all the CRs 1 to 20 because we only have 20 monsters. I'd probably try to be more like, okay, we're going to hit all of them, obviously, and then we're probably going to have a much higher concentration, probably in the range of about like 3 to 7, because that's where a lot of the play happens. There's a certain number of groups that'll kind of skip over the first couple of levels because they don't really like how the game plays at that point. A lot of stuff never quite gets into the super high levels. 3 to 7 tends to kind of be the...
Yeah, that's pretty much
the sweet spot for that. But you know, and again, obviously, you want to kind of make sure you've got a good spread on the types.
I don't know. Honestly, I feel like if we were doing a bestiary like that, we'd have several kind of like mechanical themes we would kind of work off of, just because that's the way we tend to do like our large spell compendiums and things like that. As we kind of, these are going to be the monsters, like we do, like these are going to be the monsters that eat you, and they aren't just going to be, oh, they all have swallow whole. But, you know, that's probably the approach we would take. But generally, we tend to like to take a concept and then just kind of dial in on whatever that is, so that everything kind of fits. Because I feel like that's a good model for telling stuff, to be honest. So people go, okay, well, I want aliens right now, or I want zombies right now. So they're not necessarily going to buy a book that's got every single thing, levels 1 through 20. So,
all right. Well, I think that's about all we've got for today. So thank you all very much for coming. I hope you all have a great con, and stop by our booth in the store and say hi.
Yeah, we'll be there sometimes.
Thank you for joining us for another PaizoCon 2018 seminar recording. Special thanks to the KDCon team, including Justin Sluder, Ryan Hiller, Stephen Glicker, and the entire Roll for Combat crew. No Direction's PaizoCon coverage would not be possible without their tireless effort. To find this and other great Pathfinder podcasts, visit nodirectionpodcast.com.